Major support for Out to Lunch is provided by the law firm of Jones Walker, established in 1937 with over 375 attorneys in offices throughout the U.S., providing a comprehensive range of services to a local, national, and international client base. JonesWalker.com.
From Tsunami Sushi in downtown Lafayette, we're Out to Lunch with Christian Mader, editor and publisher of The Current. It's business, Acadiana style.
Welcome to Out to Lunch. I'm Christian Mader. America's had a complicated relationship with downtowns. When we invented the suburbs in the mid-20th century, downtowns were pretty much left behind, but they made a roaring comeback in the 21st century. And that story might sound familiar for folks in Lafayette. Lafayette's own downtown was pretty much left for dead in the 1980s and 90s. It was practically a no man's land in the late 20th century, but started coming back to life at the turn of the millennium. And that turnaround didn't come from nowhere. In 1983, some local business leaders created Downtown Lafayette Unlimited, a nonprofit group that promotes activity and commerce in downtown Lafayette, sort of like a chamber of commerce. Most folks know DLU by its major public programs like Downtown Alive, and most recently the building of an inclusive playground at Parc Sanssouci. And today, DLU is headed by Jessica Hauervoss, who took over as DLU's executive director in 2023. Jessica comes from a marketing background. She moved to Lafayette to go to UL and got jobs in marketing and business development at Acadiana Center for the Arts, Brand Russo, and LogoJet. And then Jessica got involved in DLU as a board member, later becoming board president. Her job today is to promote downtown as a destination and community asset and to raise money for DLU's programs and activities. Jessica Hauervoss, welcome to Out to Lunch.
Thank you for having me. And you got my name right. That was perfect.
Oh, thank you. I do the best I can. American downtowns can be pretty old. That's why folks left for the suburbs in the first place. Lots of cheap new stuff. But downtowns have great bones and great buildings, and putting them back into proper form is a great way to freshen up the built environment and create a sense of place. For that kind of work, you'll need an architect. My guest, Nick Bork, is an architect's architect. Fun fact, Nick was the first person to receive a master's degree in architecture from UL. And from there, he worked as a staff designer in Baton Rouge before returning to Lafayette to open his own firm in 2013. He later joined firm Holly & Smith Architects in 2022, where he now serves as its studio director. Holly & Smith have earned a reputation for restoring forgotten buildings, particularly in downtowns and main streets. They mostly work on commercial projects with some residential contracts mixed in, and they've carved out a niche for themselves in sustainable design and specialize in using passive climate control systems, landscaping, and shading to achieve comfortable interiors with a smaller carbon footprint. The firm has locations in Lafayette, Baton Rouge, and Houma. Nick Bork, welcome to Out to Lunch.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So, Jessica, Lafayette's downtown hasn't really been known as a place people live for most of its late 20th century career, but that's actually changing quite rapidly, and we've seen a few hundred residential units coming online in recent years. So I just kind of wanted to start there. I mean, what's really changed to actually attract the new housing? I mean, there was always sort of a chicken and an egg kind of thing. I mean, did we get a chicken and now we're getting eggs? I mean, what's happening there?
Well, you kind of took the words right out of my mouth, but I think so. I think we have The desire has always been there. I think people have always wanted to live downtowns because downtowns are really cool. You park once and you have everything that you need within a walking distance. I think lately, what kind of to your point earlier, is that our downtown's not dead anymore. I think people feel the vibrancy and they feel that there's a lot of life here and they want to be a part of it. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, if they have to wait a couple of years for a grocery store to come, cool, but they want to be a part of it. And I think that over the last couple of years, what we've seen, even in residential market studies, is that the demand continues to be there. And so I think we finally are listening to the people and saying, all right, we're going to build it because they're ready to come.
I mean, talk to us a little bit about how they actually make that determination, because I've heard arguments about this in the past where it would sort of say like, well, you know, if people wanted to live downtown, they would be building the buildings, right? Like, yeah, sort of this like supply and demand thing. I mean, was it really as simple as, well, they just didn't have a place to live?
Partially, for sure. I mean, I think that you have to build not only the place as far as like grand scheme of place of downtown is, but a literal building. And so I think for a lot of us, we have a deep love for our surface parking lots. We sometimes have buildings that have to have a lot of investment in them to make them residential. And so I think that we had stakeholders who saw the potential, saw what downtown could be for residents, and said, okay, I'm gonna put the investment in. And we've seen the Municipal come online the past couple of years. We've seen the Vermilion Lofts come online, and then the Monroe as well. And leasing is picking up quickly. And I think people, you know, whether they're young professionals or if they're even students or people who just want to have that urban lifestyle, that we're now providing housing options for them.
Yeah, Nick, I mean, your firm, right, has a specialty in restoring older buildings. And so I'm thinking about, like, with a new build, you'd think you got kind of a blank canvas. It might be easier. So why do why older buildings instead of just building a new thing? Isn't that like an easier thing to do?
At times it is, you know, but one of our ethos at Holly & Smith, you know, we design for life.
Yeah.
And that's kind of a catch-all phrase, really.
Sure.
And we design for the lives that people live, but mm-hmm. also, you know, like what you talked earlier with sustainability, that's kind of the life as well.
Yeah.
I think it's really nice when you start to insert an existing life into a design, and you have that indigestible that you just deal with, and that becomes part of the beauty of the building. So I think, you know, there's a charm to older structures, and whenever you make them current and appropriate for 21st century living and working and that sort of thing, it really has a quality to it that new buildings sometimes miss.
So, you know, because you guys have a footprint, you know, throughout, you know, with two or three cities here in Louisiana, I mean, are you mostly designing in those downtowns? Are you guys working in other communities? I mean, give us a sense of, you know, primarily where you're working and what that looks like.
Yeah, so the firm has a really robust portfolio in downtown Hammond, Louisiana, actually, which is where our home office is located. I believe the number's in the 40s, the buildings that we've affected and touched there. The firm also kind of serves as a development leg as well. So the founders of our firm have taken it upon themselves to actually restore buildings in downtown Hammond and make them into mixed-use spaces where people live and work, walk to work, that sort of thing. And it really kind of, you know, put your money where your mouth is sort of thing. And it really shows that it works. And one of the most wonderful things about getting new talent into our home office at Holly & Smith is they often live within blocks of our home office and walk to work. So it kind of bridges that gap between your professional life and your academic career, where you're starting to launch slowly into life. And walking to work and living in an urban environment really helps with that. So
is Hammond a walkable place? I mean, I used to go to like soccer tournaments in Hammond when I was a kid, and I don't think our listening audience really reaches to Hammond, so I don't feel like I'm insulting anybody here, but that was not my impression of it, really.
Well, it's really become one. It's become a walkable place. The downtown area has really come a long way. In fact, it's won Main Street America Awards.
Wow.
And it's beautiful. It's really well maintained. It's very I must say, well designed. The master plan was done by a really, you know, respectable firm, and it's really kind of proof of what can happen when people invest in their downtowns. And it's an entertainment district. It's a place to work. It's a place to live. Place to play.
Yeah, I mean, Jessica, he's talking about a master plan. I mean, it's very intentional public investment and walkability, those kinds of things, and that's part of the downtown Lafayette story. I mean, like, I'm not quite old enough to remember the 80s and 90s, and, you know, old timers tell me about, oh, there were, you know, Jefferson Street in the late 20th century was a gravel road. But so we've kind of at this point grown to understand downtown mostly around Jefferson Street as it looks now. I mean, do you have a sense of where that's supposed to go now? I mean, like I think like downtown Lafayette's got a pretty solid front door. I mean, is it that we need to start looking at the rest of the house? I mean, where are we with that?
100%. So I think that when people think about downtown Lafayette, they do think about Jefferson Street as kind of our main street, if you will. But as we start kind of going down the different blocks off of Jefferson Street, that's where we're starting to see a good bit of development. I think that Parc Sans Souci is a really perfect example where that is really a core experience in and of itself.
Yeah.
We just had the small business challenge where someone's going to occupy a space in the park. The playground will be done in just a matter of weeks. We have a lot of great tenants who are across the street. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of vibrancy that's happening in that area that's also becoming family friendly, which I think is also a kind of new concept for downtown Lafayette, where people can do things with their family and their kids there. So I think the developments are kind of happening off of what is our main street, Jefferson Street. But I think it's, you know, you take it block by block and you really are intentional with what you're doing off those blocks.
Yeah. I mean, Nick, is, you know, from your perspective, like kind of working in the private sector and being a contractor around the space, I mean, I understand you have a specific role within the firm, but I mean, like, are you know, you talked a little bit about the firm sort of doing the master plan in Hammond. And I mean, and is that sort of a reaction to a client demand? Hammond says, we really want to be a more walkable city. Or is that driven by the consultant with the expertise and saying, you know, I see where cities are going, Hammond, and you should really think about changing the way your downtown looks?
I think it's a little of both. You know, I think the client comes to you, the city, the town, city comes to the firm and requests, you know, they know that something needs to be done. They Yep. know that new life needs to be injected into their urban core or whatever, every area of town you may be working on. And I think it's up to, you know, the professional to educate that client and really push what we have seen to really work. And
do you guys get a lot of pushback on, like, it's Louisiana, it's hot, no one wants to walk? I mean, I feel like this is the conversation I hear, you know, some folks is like, I don't get it. Stop building sidewalks, they're too hot. I mean, so when you're in Hammond, last I checked, still in Louisiana. I mean, did it take, in other words, some convincing that this is what people really wanted after we'd sort of given that up for decades?
You know, I think it doesn't take a whole lot of convincing nowadays. If you look around in downtown Lafayette, look at the most activated spaces. It's the parklets, it's the people eating out on the sidewalks. Yeah. The Acadiana Mall is dead, by the way, and that's what it looks like whenever you have an air-conditioned roadway or sure. street to enjoy. And I think people are realizing the beauty of coming back to interacting with the public and, yeah. and being within that public realm on a daily basis, whether you're working, eating, living, whatever it may be.
Yeah, I mean, Jessica, does that resonate with you in the sense of like how downtown now markets itself to business owners and saying like, this is where you want to be if you're a retailer, right? I mean, if yeah. the previous model, for whatever it's worth, was say an indoor shopping mall, and we're saying like, you left us, come on back. People yeah. want to be outside again. I mean, what how does that even work within your role in terms of like the extent to which your job is sort of advocate for downtown and convince people like, this is the place to be?
I think a lot of times the people we're talking to have certain assumptions that if you get a lot of traffic, like literal car traffic in front of your business, then you'll be successful. But really what we try to teach people is when you have people who have the opportunity to literally walk in front of their businesses and look in their windows, see that there's activity, mm-hmm. it's a lot easier to walk in the door if you're not driving past it. Mm-hmm. And so I think we're just teaching people truly about human behavior and how they make decisions, and it's sort of marketing and it's sort of psychology. But whenever we're talking to businesses specifically, we talk a lot about experiences and environment. And so making sure that where you're located, it's not just about you being right there, but also what you're surrounded by. And mm-hmm. so whenever you have a group of businesses that are surrounded by different types of other businesses, you're going to be more successful.
Now, I think it might be useful here, Jessica, to kind of like clarify for people, I think, what is an often confusing thing, which is you have DLU, which is mm-hmm. a nonprofit, mm-hmm. and the Downtown Development Authority, which is a taxing body and, mm-hmm. and a government agency in its own right. I mean, so talk to us a little bit about that distinction, like the thing that you get up every day and have to worry about as opposed to, say, the CEO of DDA.
Sure. So DLU was founded in the 80s, back to your point, because downtown was dead. And so they were like, how do we have revitalization in the area and get foot traffic? So DLU was founded really for that purpose. And in turn, Downtown Alive was founded for that purpose. And so then they realized, well, now we have people coming downtown, but we need people to make it look nice. You know, we need people to be thinking about what this looks like from the really, I guess, logistical side of drainage and capital improvements and projects and where do we put trees. Mm-hmm. So my job is not to think about trees. My job is, as the nonprofit, is to really engage with the stakeholders and the members who are DLU members. Yep. And we also provide programming downtown really as our broader mission to drive foot traffic. Because we really believe that where the people are, that's the places that are really thriving. So every day that's waking up, and what I really do is I get to just be a giant cheerleader and recruiter for downtown. Whereas the DDA is kind of on, I don't want to say on the back end, but really doing a lot of that logistical planning, development, partnering with our city government and kind of projects like that.
So the distinction here being you're kind of more on this sort of advocacy people side, whereas DDA has to worry more about operations. I mean, what happens in here and what you do with the tax dollars.
Yes, exactly.
You're listening to Out to Lunch. I'm Christian Mader. I'm talking to Downtown Lafayette Executive Director Jessica Hauervoss and architect Nick Bork of Holly and Smith. So, Nick, I mean, kind of a similar question to you, which is, you're an architect, right? You got a master's in architecture, but your role now is studio director, which I'll admit is not a term I'm familiar with within that context. So talk to us a little bit like what your day-to-day life actually is in your job.
Well, it depends on the day. you know, as a studio director, there's many hats to wear, and which actually is part of the exciting part of the job. There is the design component where on the day-to-day helping develop designs and meeting with our design directors and making sure that our projects or whatever design may be on the boards is staying true to the big idea, as we call it. But there's also the similar stuff that Jessica deals with, where I'm looking at quarterly projections and staffing and that sort of thing. You know, it's a beautiful thing to have a firm with three offices in three different cities. We share resources. You know, we have champions of design in each studio. We may have a champion of code research. You can really tap into lots of resources between multiple offices. And part of my job is to make sure that all of those resources are allocated properly and called on when necessary.
So you're kind of an operator at the, for lack of a better word, like corporate level. Like you've got engagement at each office from your office here in Lafayette.
Right. It's what we would refer to as our leadership level. So
Sure. Kind of brings to mind an idea in my head, like, you know, you have a firm, you guys have a branding identity, and you know, of course, I imagine your clients come to you based on a reputation. I mean, do architectural firms have a sense of, well, that's not a Holly and Smith building? And I guess what I'm asking is sort of like, you know, is part of your job sort of the quality control component to say like, well, this is what we produce, this is how we approach these kinds of projects?
Sure, absolutely. We do feel that a job has to be the right fit for our firm, and we have a lot of fits, honestly. Yep. We do a lot of state bid work, we do a lot of public bid work, we do a lot of state selection board work, so that allows us to decide which projects to pursue.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, to be real honest about whether the project is going to help you move your idea of what architecture should be forward or not is a huge test, right? On, you know, we meet weekly, and we have what we call go no go meetings, where we actually, as leadership, vote on whether or not we're going to pursue a project to make sure it fits into what we believe is good, healthy architecture.
Yeah, I mean, Jessica, when you're thinking about how to kind of continue revitalizing downtown, right? I mean, I feel like at some level, you get to a point where people are like, there are people here, right? I mean, how much more life do you need? I mean, like, is there a level of this where you get to say sort of mission accomplished? I mean, I don't know if anybody ever feels that quite that final, but at some level, you know, I feel like I've been to a lot of meetings where there's a sense of like downtown needs to grow. And I kind of walk out of work downtown for 10 years. And I, even in the 10 years that I've been here, there are more people walking around on Jefferson Street than there were in 2015. So I don't know. I mean, talk to me a little bit about like what the next marker of success actually needs to be.
Sure. So I think part of it is maybe mission one accomplished. I like to think of the work that we do is has a lot of missions. I think it falls under the umbrella of vibrancy, but what's the mission and how we get more residents here. Mm-hmm. Next mission, how do we ensure that there's a lot of family-friendly programming and infrastructure? How do we, next mission, how do we advocate to make sure that our sidewalks and our infrastructure is ADA compliant? So I think that we probably have about a gazillion missions, if I'm being honest, and I don't know that the work will ever end, which is great, which makes it fun. But it also, I think, allows people to paint a picture of what downtown could be and grow to be, because I think we have a lot of work to do. I think I have some good job security.
Is there like an ideal downtown customer? I mean, you've kind of detailed out, like you've gone back to it being important for downtown to say have family friendly options, right? But I'm kind of wondering, like, you know, some downtowns don't have that, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, and they're known as nightclub districts, and that's fine. I mean, like, is that just a mission that, you know, the folks within DLU have decided this is the kind of downtown we want to build? Or is that, again, coming back to sort of a market analysis and saying, like, we need that customer to be successful?
I think that the most thriving downtowns that are thriving 24/7, and sometimes that that 24 is when you have residents sleeping.
Yeah.
But you really want to think about holistically what a successful downtown looks like. Mm-hmm. And I guess our moniker for success is kind of based on industry best practices. But also when you think about the greater Lafayette, people love Lafayette because of family, because of culture, because they have opportunities and options to go do things throughout the day. And even outside of people who, you know, might have young families, so a young professional, a single person, they want to be able to have something for them too. And so I think for us, we want everyone to be a downtown customer. We don't want to say that, or I guess on the flip side, I should say, we always want to say that there's something for everyone here, and that's really important for us.
Yeah. Nick, I mean, I guess I wanted to get a clear sense of maybe some of the types of projects you guys have been working on. You mentioned public bid processes, so you're doing things in sort of the municipal space. I know you guys were working on a National Guard facility, for instance. I mean, how do you guys, you know, develop architectural language to be able to operate within so many different spaces, right? Like, it's a very different thing to deal with, I don't know what the specific use of that National Guard building is, but a military building and a place where somebody's going to live.
Absolutely. You know, we do have 4 National Guard facilities on the boards right now. Yeah. One under construction, one about to break ground within the year, I'd say, if not early next year, here in Lafayette and UL's Research Park area, one in Abbeville, et cetera. You know, we also spend a lot of time working in that K-12 education where we're designing for how a child experiences architecture every day at school. Mm-hmm. We do religious design. We do performing art design. We do a lot of historical restoration. And, yeah. And you know, to kind of touch on what you guys mentioned earlier, I think we spend a lot of time asking the question of what is relevant mm-hmm. for our current time and place as far as design goes. And we truly believe that good design is adaptable throughout. You know, it kind of can stand the test of time.
Yeah.
For example, we actually have a really exciting project right now where we are restoring St. Louis Cathedral in Jackson Square in New Orleans.
Wow.
That is a very exciting job for us, obviously, and that is a job where it is our mission to make sure that amazing icon or landmark building of New Orleans stands the test of time, at least for another 50 years, where you have to keep it going for what it is mm-hmm. and respect its history. There's another example of something like that. The complete opposite, really, is Our Lady of Lourdes Church, 2400 Napoleon Avenue in New Orleans. It's no longer a church. It is a beautiful structure that is performed as a religious space for years, but now it's going to be an event venue. It's still beautiful design, and it can still be adapted to its new life. So I think, you know, especially when we talk about downtowns, that goes back to your question earlier, why old buildings? Well, they're good design, mm-hmm. just in general. And I think that good design can also be tested on a master planning standpoint. Whenever you're planning a whole city, a whole town, a whole block, maybe it's a linear park, make it good design, and it can become relevant for many generations. You know, you mentioned downtown Lafayette being dead in the 80s. I'll date myself and say that I experienced downtown Lafayette in the 80s. My mom worked downtown as a dental assistant, and I caught my first Mardi Gras beat on a balcony on Jefferson Street.
Yeah.
We still went to the flower shop on Jefferson Street. We still came to the dentist on Jefferson Street, but I was able, you know, throughout my time studying, and then as I left Lafayette for a little bit and came back to see downtown Lafayette kind of come back to life, mm-hmm. it's been really, really interesting to see and to witness that on a personal level, so that as a professional I can further that good design and make sure that it's adaptable and good for life in general.
I'm curious if you know, because you guys are doing so much with the 4 National Guard buildings, I mean, do you have to have a specialty in doing military architecture? I mean, like, I know often, like, you know, I've talked to consultants, right? You have to get certain types of certifications, right, to be a military contractor. Does that apply to an architect?
Sure. It applies across all of, you know, many projects that we have. You know, the National Guard is just one example where once you go through the process with the National Guard, you start to really understand what they're looking for and how they function. And also the interesting thing is, how do we bring buildings that, quite frankly, are failing them from a design standpoint and replacing them with buildings that will function and will serve them? You know,
what are they looking for now that they weren't before? Without giving any defense secrets up, I mean, I just kind of want to know, like, the military does often sort of set pace in other industries. They tend to be kind of innovative, is I guess my point. Is like, so kind of wondering, like, what can I learn in case I need to build a building from the National Guard?
You know, what we are designing, the majority of what we're designing for them are called readiness facilities. Okay. So as opposed to just a place to report for drill, it's truly a readiness facility that can support the community or come to action, whether there be a natural disaster or whatever they may need to take care of. So they're becoming more readiness hubs versus just a building that they park really cool vehicles at. We do other types of architecture that also require specialties.
Sure.
You know, we were talking about performing arts, we're talking about religious spaces, hotels. We've done, you know, a lot of work with Cambria Hotels in Nashville and New Orleans. You start to develop a niche with a client and a type of architecture, and then you find, you know, someone who just loves that type of work, and they become the champion of that in within the firm and grow and groom that client relationship.
Yeah. Jessica, I mean, speaking of readiness and niches, right? I mean, I have observed that Lafayette, as you pointed out, has downtown particularly, has sort of started to find other spaces in it to pull that together. I mean, you know, thinking about DLU's role sort of advocating for downtown, I mean, has that really come from, you know, downtown as an organization saying, well, this is where we need to develop next? Or has that primarily come from sort of private interest, people saying, like, well, here's my opportunity to develop, and so it's kind of more an organic thing?
Truly, I think it's both. I think that sometimes downtown or our organization as a whole thinks that we kind of work in a vacuum. Like, what's good for us? What's good for Jefferson Street? And really what we're thinking about is what's good for downtown is probably good for the rest of Lafayette.
Mm-hmm.
And so that does come from the public input and public side, but also the private side, and kind of having those conversations with businesses, stakeholders, investors, and residents, and even the university, you know, because mm-hmm. they're just a stone's throw away from us. And I think sometimes we all are operating in silos, but really we're trying to kind of break that. And not only does a thriving downtown help downtown, but it helps everyone else as well.
Mm-hmm.
Typically in cities where you see thriving downtowns, the city as a whole is thriving. They have really great tourism dollars. They have other great infrastructure, and it's really just a great place to go. And you typically hear people speaking very highly of them. And typically where people don't have great downtowns, they're not really making the headlines for good reason.
Yeah. So, I mean, look, there's no doubt that the quality of our built environment has a pretty serious impact on our quality of life. So Jessica and Nick, thanks for joining me today on Out to Lunch Acadiana.
Thanks for having us.
My guests on Out to Lunch Acadiana today have been Downtown Lafayette Executive Director Jessica Hauer-Voss and Architect Nick Bork of Holly and Smith Architects. We edited this conversation to fit into our time slot here on KRVS. And you can hear our unedited conversation and find out more about Jessica and Nick by listening to the Out to Lunch Acadiana podcast. You can find and subscribe on your podcast app and on our website. It's acadiana.com. If you want to know what we all look like, you can find photos from this show on itsacadiana.com and on our Out to Lunch Acadiana social media. These photos were taken by Aster Morgan. You can find more of Aster's photos at astermorgan.com. Out to Lunch Acadiana is a production of INO Broadcasting for itsacadiana.com and KRBS 88.7 FM. The producer of our show is Grant Morris. Our technical producer is Eric Merle. Our associate producer is Chad Terrio. Our researcher is Leah Erdialis. Today's show is engineered by Dylan Babineau. I'm Christian Mader, editor of the Current Lafayette's nonprofit newsroom. And to get the scoop on Lafayette, head over to thecurrentla.com and sign up for our free newsletter. We'll see you next time for more business and conversation on Out to Lunch Acadiana. Bye-bye.
Out to Lunch Acadiana was recorded live over lunch at Tsunami Sushi on Jefferson Street in downtown Lafayette. Tsunami is open Tuesday through Saturday for lunch and dinner, serving sushi, sashimi, salads, and authentic Japanese grilled dishes. Tsunami welcomes casual dining or reservations. More information at servingsushi.com. Major support for Out to Lunch is provided by the law firm of Jones Walker, established in 1937 with over 375 attorneys in offices throughout the U.S., providing a comprehensive range of services to a local, national, and international client base. JonesWalker.com. Mitchell Foreman wrote and performs all the music on Out to Lunch. You can hear Mitchell's music anywhere great jazz is sold or streamed, and at MitchellForeman.com. If you'd like to be part of Out to Lunch, to learn how your business or organization can become an Out to Lunch program partner, email info@inobroadcasting.com.